one 11-minute episode takes almost 10 months to produce.
Wow. Right.
So when we're recording the Christmas episode, it's, you know, April. So I remember when we did the first Christmas special, Steve's like, they got to get in the mood. We need Christmas. So I'm like trying to find Christmas decorations, you know, in the middle of April. And we decorated the whole studio with a little Christmas tree and some lights. And so everybody can get in the Christmas spirit before we recorded that episode.
Welcome to SpongeBob Binge Pants,
Nickelodeon's official podcast about all things SpongeBob.
I'm Hector Navarro.
And I'm Frankie Grande.
Frankie, we're back, baby, and we have got a...
I've missed you.
Stellar, I've missed you too, my friend.
I've missed you.
A stellar interview lined up today. We are talking to co-executive producer of SpongeBob SquarePants, Jenny Monica, overseeing SpongeBob, overseeing the Patrick Star Show, Camp Coral. An incredible, incredible human being who's been on the show since the beginning. We're going to get some great stories of those early seasons. We're going to get some great predictions about where the show's going to go from here. Cannot wait to talk to Jenny Monica.
Redefining overachievement. Here we go.
No kidding. Get ready to feel real bad about yourself, listeners, because she's crushing it. She crushed it. So...
Yeah, get ready to feel like you have accomplished nothing in your life. Uh-huh. Here we go. Welcome, Jenny Monica. We have interviewed some unbelievable people in the SpongeBob world. We have heard from some artists behind the scenes. We've heard from vocal artists. And now I'm very, very excited to talk to Jenny Monica, executive producer in the SpongeBob world. Before we even get even any further, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Wait, tell me your actual title and how you like to be referred in this amazing world where you do so many things.
So my actual title is co-executive producer that I share with two other co-executive producers. I'm actually transitioning into a VP role in animation. So I will take on other shows besides SpongeBob and his universe.
Wow.
So yes, so it's very exciting.
It's really fun to have someone from the co-EP of the co-EP world to answer some of the other questions that we have not been able to ask.
And congrats on that transition. Can't believe you're going to be more busy and working on more shows. That's going to be great. That's great. Right.
I know. Just throw them all on there.
With SpongeBob Binge Pants, Frank and I have been going back to the beginning of the show, 1999, when the show was first airing, which is insane. Frankie and I grew up with the show, and we remember first watching it when we were younger, and to be able to rewatch it has been so great and so interesting. Do you have a story of the first time you watched SpongeBob SquarePants, the pilot episode? Like, what did you think? Where were you? What year was it?
What color were you wearing?
Right. I could answer all of those. Wow. I was wearing a red dress.
Yes! Fantastic.
I started off at receptionist at Nickelodeon, and I was interviewing for the position of Steve Hillenburg, who is the creator of SpongeBob, his assistant. And so I interviewed with him, and then afterwards he gave me the VHS and was like, here, take this, and this is the pilot, and let me know what you think. So I went, you know, back to one of the little TVs in Nickelodeon, and I watched the pilot, and I didn't know what to think. It was so different and out there. I was like, okay, let's see. And there was two receptionists at the time, and she had been there longer. And so I had asked her if she was interviewing for the position, because I thought, oh, she has seniority. And she's like, oh, no, I've seen that pilot. It's horrible. It's going to be canceled in 6 months. And I was like, okay. And but I saw it and it was cute and funny. And I ended up getting the job. And here I am 22 years later, 23 years later.
I have to follow up with that, because that's such a wild thing to think about, that like people didn't have faith in SpongeBob knowing what we know now. But just like a quick sidebar question, was that kind of a common, you know, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but was that sort of a common thinking at the time working on that show, being like, oh, maybe this is too weird and it's not going to get picked up?
I think when you start a project, it's always like, how long is it going? How long is it going to be last? And you don't. Animation is 2-3 seasons usually, you know. So, but I think when we were all in it, I remember waiting for the pickup and not sure if it would get a season two, but I think we all kind of knew we were making something special and fun. It didn't feel like work. It was just, we just had a blast. So yes, you were a little anxious waiting for that season two pickup, but I think we were all confident in what was being made.
I actually got emotional when you were telling the story about, you know, being the receptionist who then went into interview as an assistant. Mm-hmm. And now you're sitting here as the co-EP and vice president of, you know, SpongeBob, of the universe of SpongeBob SquarePants and all its subsidiaries. No, it's just, I just think that's such an unbelievably powerful message. So thank you for sharing that with us and with our listeners, who I think would really benefit from hearing someone like you talking about something like that. Yeah. So what was it like to assist, and like when you got the job, like how was it working with Steven Hillenburg in those early days?
It was amazing. It was a lot. First season, we were ordering dinner, they were working through lunch. It was, you know, he was so clear on what his vision was and what he wanted. And, you know, if network had notes, he had his reason of why he wanted. He was so confident and so amazing and brilliant and knew what he was doing. You know, I'm the co-EP who's the non-creative. Every once in a while I'll chime in, but I'm the money and budget person. So okay. to be surrounded by these it was just, it kind of, you know, it sucks you in. They're so brilliant. And you know what, in the first season, when we would pitch a board, we would put it in the conference room and you would have it up there, and the guys who wrote it would pitch it to the entire crew and to the network to get notes and to see the timing and how everyone reacted. And it was pretty amazing.
And just to say, as the creative type, I get nowhere without the business type next to me. So literally, I will just sit in my room and like be creative alone with no one watching. So we need people like you. So thank you, Jenny, for existing.
When I bust out my little, you know, schedules and the color, like Mark and Vince are like, I can't. Like, just tell me, when do I need to turn this in? Oh my God,
I need that so badly. So okay, great.
Yeah, thank you for wrangling the Vinces and the Marks and the creatives of the SpongeBob world for all of these years.
So we actually just talked about boating school on the show.
Episode four. Season 1.
The very first introduction to Mrs. Puff. And there is lore around the fact that the show is supposed to be entirely set in a school. Is that true?
Was that a real thing from Nickelodeon at the time, that the boating school episode was able to like technically satisfy but then still keep the show what it was?
That is true, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, yes, they wanted him to go to school, and Steve did not want him to have a specific age. He lives on his own, he has a job, he didn't, and so that was the compromise, that we would throw in some school sessions with Mrs. Puff. Yeah,
that's so cool.
Compromise, that's great.
And so smart, also very, very smart, and also created one of my favorite characters as Mrs. Puff, and one of my favorite situations that SpongeBob continues to revisit. Mm-hmm. Jenny, he hasn't gotten his license yet, has he?
He has not, unfortunately, no. Fortunately for all of us.
That's true.
For the rest of us.
It's true for the other drivers on the road. It is something, but it is still a passion of his, and I just love that there is a goal that he has set and he does not ever want to
let that goal drop.
And he's
optimistic. He's going to get it one day. Yeah. He thinks he is.
The symbol of optimism, I think, for several generations is SpongeBob SquarePants.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. Yes.
You also worked in casting,
I did.
Right? So what was your job? How did you enjoy it?
I was kind of the wrangler again in the sessions, you know, getting everybody's takes and all of that. I really liked the production aspect of it. And so I made the a lateral move to move into production and go that way instead of staying in the casting. But for SpongeBob, we record every Wednesdays, and those were my favorite days. We just, the cast is amazing. When we, the first time when we recorded, you know, it takes one 11-minute episode takes almost 10 months to produce.
Wow.
So when we're recording the Christmas episode, it's, you know, April. So I remember when we did the first Christmas special, Steve's like, they got to get in the mood. We need Christmas. So I'm like trying to find Christmas decorations, you know, in the middle of April. And we decorated the whole studio with a little Christmas tree and some lights and so everybody can get in the Christmas spirit before we recorded that episode.
That's so funny.
I love that so much. That's the true magic behind the scenes.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you just kind of describe the process, maybe the pipeline, and then if SpongeBob is unique to a kind of a normal process that other shows would use to get made?
So in the beginning, we were storyboard driven. So that would be just the outline, and then you would have the storyboard artist who would board it out. That is unique, you know, usually. And now we're script driven. It's it's very hard to find artists who can draw SpongeBob. People always think he's easier to draw than he really is, but he is not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's deceptively simple.
All of them are. So like transitioning them into the CG world, I mean, that's a whole different story. But so to get somebody who could draw the characters well, but then also write it's twofold. There's a few of those. So it's definitely more difficult now. So we start with premise and outline and scripts. So premise a week, outline a week, scripts 5 weeks. So once the scripts are done, then it goes to a rough board artist who will board it out at his, at every phase, like to kind of add our punch up. So at the rough board phase, he'll board out the 11-minute script and add in, you know, his little flavor, and then it'll go into animatic. So in animatic is where they'll see the timing. Usually, sometimes they're a little long. You got to cut them down to 11 minutes. And then it'll go to a team that's cleaning it up and putting it on model and also plussing and adding their own little gags along the way also.
Wow. Well, that's awesome.
And actually after the rough board is when we get the actors in. So the actors record off of the rough board. So that when we're cleaning up and plussing, the artists know, you know, the actors add so much to it as well. So they know how big Tom's going to make the take or how small, or, you know, so that they can draw accordingly. So that's before we get to final cleanup. So we take the voices actor, then we clean it up, goes back into animatic again for final lock. And then that's when we start all the design process and get all of that locked down in the timing, which is, you know, one animation director for 3 weeks, basically moving every character in the show. And then we ship it to Rough Draft, which is in Korea. They do our animation. They've always done our animation. They're amazing. And they have it for 17 weeks. And they animate one 11-minute show, takes 17 weeks. And then we get it back, and we go into post with sound and color correction and music. And that's 7 weeks. And then we deliver. And we do that every
simple.
Yeah. So we have three shows. So we start one show a week, and then we skip 1 week, which isn't really a skip week, but, and then we start three more shows, and then we skip and three more. So we're one season of 26 episodes will take us almost 2 years.
And then you haven't even described, like, and then we took on a second show.
Right.
Yeah. Which we took on Camp Coral, and then a third show. And at some point, three films got made.
Oh.
At
yes.
The, like, yeah. Like, this is insane.
And thank you for walking us through this, because on, like, for me as a fan, like, I knew none of this, you know, like, I just assumed there was like one guy that was like, oh my God, just, okay, I finished drawing. Just hand me the yellow. I just got to quickly color SpongeBob in and then like send it off. You know, like, this is so crazy that the process, it goes through, I mean, like, almost what, like a couple hundred people's hands.
Oh yeah.
Before we get the thing that makes us so smile and laugh. And also I think that you guys are incredible. You're a factory at this point.
Because, right.
Like, you are doing so many of them. But the quality has never suffered. And that's another thing that we talk about all the time, Hector and I, because we've talked about Camp Coral and we've talked about the Patrick Show and how we lose our minds with how wonderful they both are.
Yeah.
And it's not even that. It's the other sort of milestones that you guys have hit is like going from full screen to widescreen and going, yes, you know, to HD and these kinds of, these sort of like invisible
CG
upgrades. Right. Yeah, these invisible upgrades to the show that just by virtue of you guys being such a long-lived show, like you hit these incredible, you know, updates to technology and how, yeah, that has affected the show. And, you know, I told Frankie, the more, even as a fan, the more you study this process and what you guys have to go through, I think the more you learn to appreciate the, yes, art. And, yeah, you just said it takes you guys 2 years to do a season.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, unreal. That's so wild.
Well, just when most people hear that it takes 10 months just to make one 11-minute, there, it's, what?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, yeah. I literally thought it was like a guy in a room being, yeah, like, okay, yeah, cool, bring in the voice actors now. I finished drawing.
Right. It'll, you know, be done, like, in a week. You got it. You know.
It's funny because we have like, we used to do tours, and anytime we have little tours, they always want to come and see SpongeBob. So you kind of give them, yeah, the little lowdown, and, yeah, you know, the kids want to see the color and everything. And the, mm-hmm, parents are always like, wait, so how long did, you know, they're the ones, mm-hmm, asking me all the questions of, mm-hmm, how it works. It's so, wow. I had no idea. The process, yeah, is definitely interesting.
Oh my God,
I mean,
so
we started on pencil, you know, erasing and making copies. Oh, this needs to be a little bit bigger. Make it, wow, you know, 20% bigger, and then bringing it back to the board. And, you know, when we made the transition to digital, it was like, oh gosh, we need to slowly make that transition because we still had to stay on schedule. And, mm-hmm, you know, and it turning out how much faster it was than paper and pencil, it actually ended up being an easy transition. But, you know, we, yeah, started very old school of, you know, eraser shavings everywhere.
Wow. And that's got to be like an interesting thing for everybody to go through. Like, are there any stories about like people being like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if we can, mm-hmm, do this.
Yeah. The execs were like, we don't, you know, think we could do this. We don't want to pressure any of the artists. The artists, sure, were actually the ones who were like, no, we're hearing that this is easier to do, and that it might. So, like I said, awesome, we planned on, okay, out of the 5 days, one day will be digital. And so that we can slowly work it in, so we didn't lose too much time in our schedule. And, wow, when the artists got in there and started working on it and figuring out the Cintiq and how much faster it was, they were like, oh no, we're all in. And they were, because of them, they wanted to learn it. The other shows were starting digitally. And so it ended up being a lot faster than pencil and paper.
Wow.
Awesome. The hard part is there's so many cheats digitally that you kind of have to stay on. We don't want you to copy and paste this one, and so he looks the same in every panel. You know, we want you to do the drawings, because you could do that. You could copy, you could paste, you could flip, you could make him a little bit smaller. You know, you could do all of that stuff in 2 seconds. Yeah, so it was kind of like that balance of, no, you still have to draw him over and over and over again so yeah, that he, like, you know, has the appeal. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's a little bit of that, but the artists were all on board and great with that transition.
I love that it was the hardworking artists that are like, no, please, anything to make our lives easier. Here, please, yeah, let's try it. Exactly. Yeah. Like, we don't know if this digital. Know.
This might, you know, not work.
Like, oh, please, please, please. Well, outside of production, maybe this is a little tough because you are so in the world of the production and you know what it takes. But like, Jenny, do you personally have a favorite style of SpongeBob? Do you prefer the hand-drawn style, the CG style, the stop motion, like puppetry? Like, do you have a personal favorite? Like, ooh, I like when the show does this, or when the show does this.
I, you know, the 2D, the original is always, it's just, you can get so much more out of it. It's a draw. I mean, CG and taking SpongeBob with all of his craziness and his squash and his stretch and making that CG.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you know about CG, but it's very difficult. Those are all new builds, and you have to put rigs and every little thing. And, you know, CG is traditionally done with human characters. You turn them, they look the same. When SpongeBob turns, if you don't move his cheeks or his eyes or his freckles, it doesn't look right. So CG is normally, you know, you turn the characters, they're all the same. Wow. They're in their T-pose and they look the same. But SpongeBob, when he turns, you can't have him at a straight profile. There are so many technicalities. Wow. And our CG department, our CG team is so amazing. They're so amazing in how they've done the rigs and how we've had to have special builds. If it was a brand new show, and you don't know what he's capable of doing, it's different. But you know right. what he looks like, and the audience is used to that. And if he doesn't do that, you suffer in the quality because the audience expects that. So right. it's I would say CG is the hardest of the three trying to make him look like the 2D.
And was so, that just like a set? Was that just a goal as soon as you decided Camp Coral was coming out? Was it like, this is a CG show? Or was somebody like, we should do CG? You know,
we talked about doing CG years ago, probably about at least 10 years ago, maybe even 15 years ago, because it was the new thing. And, you know, everybody was doing it and they wanted to rebrand him and let's do. And we had done some tests and it did not look pretty, so we passed on it at the time. And I think now with technology and it works now. Yes. It's still very difficult, but it works now. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have worked back then.
Was there ever a pitch to do a full live action SpongeBob show, like a real kitchen sponge, just in every? I'm assuming nobody was like, we should do it like that.
The closest was the Broadway show. That was the closest.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's true.
Which again was a like not on board in the beginning. Like Steve was very, he's got to have that silhouette, and all the characters have to have the silhouette, and you couldn't do that on Broadway. And it took some convincing, and again, the Broadway producers were amazing, and that surprised us how amazing it turned out.
So did you guys have any, just talking about the Broadway show, did you guys have any sort of input, or was it done something entirely separate that you guys were kind of giving notes and overseeing and stuff?
So it was done entirely separate, but they did want to make sure that the voice was clear, that it was within, the character of the show and the IP. And so they came down and we had some sessions with them, and the writers were in there and putting their two cents in of, maybe he wouldn't say that, or he would say something like this. And they used some of that. They did want to make sure that the style was the character. Yeah.
See, the characters are so strong. Those characters are so pure that even in a human live action setting, they still can kind of come through. I mean, for the 20th anniversary, you guys had the cast do, live action versions of their characters.
Yeah. And
it's so funny. It still works, to see Tom and Bill and Clancy and everybody like it. That was really, really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun. Yeah.
There have been so many additions to the world of the show, and now we have the Patrick Starr show. And we've been talking to several of the people that are involved in that show, and I just keep marveling at how rich every single frame is. What's it been like to get the show become a little bit crazier and faster over the years? Because as an audience member, to me, like watching the Patrick Starr, I'm like, wow, this is so much crazier and faster. But 100%. Still the brand that I love.
That was the hard part with the development of it, is like, okay, how are we going to, so for me, I feel like, okay, it's my job to give the other two co-EPs what they want creatively and still figure out how that's going to work within schedule and budget. So it's like, hey, we're throwing in some stop motion here. It's like, oh gosh, okay, we're going under a couch and there's a whole nother city in there. So that's way more designs. And so it's, a first season show is always hard anyway, because you're establishing all the designs. You always have more characters. You always have more designs. Mm. But Pat, because it's so big in his imagination, anything's possible, and they do. And so it's okay, we have 40 backgrounds in this show where we normally have 15. And, as a producer, I don't want to say, okay, sorry, you can't do that. We change that location because we can't fit it in. So we really try and figure out how we're going to squeeze it in. But it's a challenge.
But that's why, though. I mean, but having someone like you work on it is why we do get to have these amazing worlds. And it's so nice that you try not to say no. Like, my goodness, I hope I work with producers like that every day for the rest of my life, I'm so used to being depicted as like, nope, that can't happen.
Nope,
up with something else. And you're like the complete opposite, which is why we get these lush, amazing universes that we get to just smile and laugh at for 11 minutes.
Those have been my favorite bosses. Even if my favorite bosses in my life have been tough, at least their first thing initially is like, let me see what I can do. Let me try. Right. Yeah. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't work out, hey, they told me they tried.
They tried. That's nice.
Jenny, how do you manage all of these chaotic, creative people? How do you manage these challenges? Like, you mentioned your color coordinated folders. I love that. I tried to, you know, I tried to Marie Kondo my life. I tried to live by that. But what is there a secret to your producing success?
Oh gosh. I honestly, I like to be very personable. I like to get to know my, my crew. I like to be involved, you know. I think that goes a long way. Sometimes artists can be insecure, and even they're doing an amazing, I mean, anyone can be insecure, not just artists, obviously, but
no, but if, especially we don't take offense to you saying that at all.
Let's be honest. Yep.
But, and so you think, oh my God, this is so amazing. They have to know it, but sometimes they don't, and they need to hear it more, you know? And so I really try, I think the hardest part for me in my transitions, and my different moving up is not being available to the crew as much. And that's hard, because I've always been hands-on, and I, like, if something's going wrong, I just want to have the conversation with the person and let's figure it out or whatever. So I think that maybe that's my secret. Yeah. Be nice to people. You get more bees with honey.
So is it just part of your job that you're also a therapist?
I'm a therapist. I've been a travel agent. Yeah. I've done everything. Absolutely. Wow. And not just when I started, just up to a year ago helping me. I've done it all.
Wow. You mentioned that artists sometimes, you know, they might not hear it enough of like, hey, this is great. You should know that this is great.
Yeah.
To try to help them in their creative endeavors and stuff. And I said earlier, like, I know that your teams and the folks who work on shows like this, they really feel it when they go do like a San Diego Comic-Con. What is it like when you have to go to a Comic-Con? Is it overwhelming? Is it like a vacation? Is everybody excited to get that feedback? Or is it like, okay, more challenges, challenges, challenges. I'm an event planner now. I have to, you know, wrangle all these people.
I love doing Comic-Con. It's fun. You know, you're going about your day, you're doing your job. You don't realize, like last time we were in New York for Comic-Con, the line was crazy and the people, and at some point it's kind of normal. And then we were leaving and we're going out a back door because we can't go out the front door because everyone will go crazy. And there's people waiting in the back door who knew we wouldn't go out the front door and going out the back door. And we're literally running with the talent to get the car because people are like going crazy. And it's sometimes it's like that. Sometimes it's like, oh, this has got to be the best job for the voiceover because you don't see their face all the time. Right. And so they are able to do this great job and kind of still live their lives. But not so much anymore. Everyone knows Tom Kenny is. And yeah, so.
Social media.
Right.
Yeah. And again, I think that because of the internet and because of the popularity of shows like SpongeBob, like fans such as myself, I think are more savvy about who's working on the show than ever before.
So unbelievable. Such an international show. Like what do you think it is about the show? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit on our you know, podcast, but what is it about the show that just appeals to literally everyone and every single nation and territory around the globe?
Like you said about his optimism and he's just so naive and everything's positive. And I think that goes far. Everybody wants a little bit of that in their life, you know? It's you know, when we started, my niece was 5 and, you know, she's 26 now and she was, you know, she loved it then, and she just actually graduated med school, and she's like texting me memes. I get memes from my nieces. All the other ones just started college, and she's in her second year, and she's like, "Well, send me memes." I said, "Oh my gosh, like there's a meme for everything." She goes, "You don't understand. I hear a SpongeBob reference every day, Auntie. Yes. Like every day."
In the medical field, every day. Yeah, that's amazing.
Wow.
That's so great.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll have parents who say thank you. Like I can actually sit and watch this with my kid rather than, you know. And so there, it's I don't know. Huge. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I studied marine biology in college. So yes, exactly. So I immediately loved the show.
Oh yeah.
What was it like when you're working with Mr. Hillenburg about with his marine biology knowledge? Because he was a marine biologist as well.
Yes. So he had all the books, and the artists had to have the books because things had to be accurate. If you said something about a lobster. Oh, no, lobsters don't do that. Like, the scripts had to be, everything had to be accurate within the marine world.
Yeah. I love that so much, because we actually break it down a little bit sometimes on this show about, like, the marine biology references and how it's accurate. And
I didn't think there was an ocean under the ocean, but Frankie corrected me. He's like, no, there's such a thing with, like, you know,
the helicline level.
Exactly. The different levels and everything. So you're telling me that when a lobster lifts weights at the beach, that's scientifically accurate? Jenny, that's amazing. I did not know that. It is. It was in the books, I guess. It was in the science textbooks.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe she's talking about how it's a segmented body shell. Okay. It's an exoskeleton. Okay.
There we go. Like, thank other you. Than that,
That's amazing. So just to kind of go back a second, talking about how you head to Korea at least once a season, mm-hmm. and then earlier you described the process about how long it actually takes the show to get made, and that Korea has it for, I think you said, 17 weeks. Is that correct?
Yes.
17 weeks where they're hand drawing the 2D SpongeBob shows, SpongeBob and Patrick. Do you get to see a lot of that process, or is it kind of like a before and after thing where it's like you guys send it to Korea and then, oh, lo and behold, 17 weeks later, it's moving?
Yes. So it is, lo and behold. So we do send it. We don't see it. Like CG, you see it in different phases. So you give notes. 2D, no, you send it. And then it comes back in color. You don't see the in-between. And then when it comes back, then you call your retakes. When you're there, we'll do that. We'll walk to each different. And it's amazing. I mean, and they're still 100% pencil and paper. They don't work on Cintiqs. They're still hand drawn.
Flipping paper and animating like that.
Our backgrounds are still hand painted. We've never changed that with Patrick. It's the same thing with SpongeBob. It's the same thing. We don't digitally paint. Most shows do. I would say we're probably the only show that still actually physically paints with pen.
So
with
even though brush, even though the characters themselves are digitally colored, the backgrounds, you're saying, are hand painted, hand done.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And how do I get one? That's my real thing. Like,
how many
Jenny,
do you
I've
have
been asking
in your
everyone,
house?
Where are the cells? Where are the stills? Yeah. Like, I want it.
Well, cells we don't. So cells, we only have cells for season one. So if you come across cells, keep them, because there's only season one.
Whoa.
Yeah. But the background, we'll do like the one setup and we'll ship that overseas and literally on board and paint. So in the last couple of years, we started scanning and we, Rough Draft has iPads so that we could send digitally. But originally we couldn't send digitally. Their color was different than ours. And with all of that, it wasn't working out. So we would physically send all of the paintings and they would match the color. So it's been probably 4 years now where we've been doing iPads and making sure theirs are color calibrated with ours so that they have the exact color that we're seeing.
This is another like limitation of technology that people don't think about.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, even if I send you an email and you pull it up, you may have like a different settings on your computer to where like the color will be different.
Right.
Yeah. That's so wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and no one, listen, they say that they check it, but like, let me just tell you, there's so many settings on these computers.
Oh, gosh.
So, it's like, I checked it, but like, did you? And also, they love to reset themselves at whenever they want. Like,
think of the
I'll
mind
turn
of
my computer
own.
And come back on, and I'm like, oh, wow, I have a black and white monitor. I had no idea. Like, okay, cool. I guess I have to go reset the whole computer again.
Right, start over.
Let's do it. Never shut your computer down.
No. Mm-hmm.
It is always watching.
Yeah.
Well, that's just unbelievable. And then Camp Coral, did you go to Technicolor in India? Have you been there?
I have been there.
Because that's so cool.
You know, India is amazing and it's fascinating. Usually when we go to Korea, because we've been doing it for so long, we like to check in and make sure everything's okay. And it's, you know, kind of like the meet and greet with everybody and make sure everybody's on track and if there's any new questions with the new season. And then you have some time to, you know, go to dinner with some of the crew or kind of do the, you know, the DMZ or the, you know, the sightseeing things in Korea. So you get a couple of days. The India trip was pure, like, we developed for Camp Coral for 3 months and then we started the show. It was, you know, it was insanely quick. Animation right now is crazy. I mean, it kind of went through like, you know, down and now it's, I mean, in this probably the most challenging part of besides developing two other shows, is crewing up for those shows. The talent pool, you know, Netflix is doing a million things, and you know, the competition is crazy, and cartoony shows are really hard to staff. It's very hard to draw cartoony shows, and that's a huge challenge for us right now.
And you guys have had such amazing creatives working on SpongeBob over the past few decades, and then they'll go off and do their own show, and you have to be like, oh great,
yeah, congrats, we lost two in the last two years that started their own two new shows. Two of our storyboard directors. It's hard. I will say though, with COVID, the maybe only good thing that came out of it is we had to, because we were all working from home, we were able to branch out. And so we have people in, you know, Australia and Mexico and Spain. That's and so artists cool. that we would have never done that before, because we always felt you had to be hands-on and you had to be in the office and you have to work with the directors and everything. And so, but since we started working, you know, virtually, it did expand the range of who we can, you know, hire now. So that's definitely a plus, and that's helped.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, and it's a double-edged sword. You know, we've heard also stories in the show, like just like actors crying, trying to set up their microphones in their closets and their houses. And it's
Or have to take a break because they're in their closet and there's no air in their closet. So they're like sweating. It's like, okay, let me take a break and go outside and get some air and then come back.
I'm hyperventilating.
Yeah. Also, our actors are used to being together. We've always done our ensemble cast, so all of them are in the room bouncing off of each other, and they're all amazing and brilliant, and they don't need that, but it's fun to do that. It's all missed for sure.
Yeah.
Do you know how spoiled you are by working on SpongeBob, or is it something that you don't feel it because you're in it?
No, I do feel it. It's bittersweet sometimes. Sometimes it's like, oh, you're in SpongeBob. No, you can't deliver late. We're airing that tomorrow. Like, you don't, you know, sometimes you don't get. And then other times it's like, oh, no, we're going to do a big premiere, so we're going to hold a bunch of them. You can have some extra time. So it's sometimes it's crazy hours and you're like, the show. And then other times it's like, ah, the show is pretty awesome. You know, I definitely know how lucky I am, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, and you mentioned earlier that, like, when you guys were starting out, that it's the norm for a show like this to go like 2-3 seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with Nickelodeon, you've had sort of like a tenure almost, like where you are on SpongeBob and that's the one that continues to go and survives. And you've seen other shows, even the fantastic shows at Nickelodeon, sort of come and go, and they kind of end their natural, you know. What has that been like to be on a show like that is almost a little bit against the norm of the animation industry?
I mean, it's been awesome, and the fact that, you know, most people have to look for a new job every 2 to 3 years, and I haven't had to, so that's been great. It's, you know, I think, again, I'm lucky with SpongeBob because some 2D shows, you're doing 2D and that's it. SpongeBob has incorporated so many different things that I don't feel like career-wise I'm missing out. I know stop motion, we put in live action, we do puppets, there's such a combination of things that we'll do, still shots where the fish opens his mouth, and you know, those type of editing things and green screens, and so I feel like with this one show, I've gotten the experience of, you know, plenty of different shows, just the little bit of experience of seeing behind the scenes of the Broadway show, and you know, like things like that. It's just a little bit of everything, and it's pretty. And so now, me going into my new role, I brought in 2 new producers, and they're like, oh my god, this is so much. It's just like all the music that's involved in the show and doing all of that stuff. I feel like I've learned it all. It's 10 shows worth of knowledge within this one show.
You're going to get no curveballs thrown your way, Jenny. Right. You're going to be like, oh, so this is a stop motion challenge?
Yeah.
That's cute. I handled that. Great. Got it. Yeah.
Done.
Where do you see the future of SpongeBob going?
Oh, God, the future.
Holograms?
Yeah. I mean, it has been discussed. There's, I think, sky's the limit with him.
When you say for SpongeBob that the sky's the limit, you guys are talking about projecting episodes into right. the sky. That's what yeah. you're talking about, right? Like, that's the future.
For the next, who's going to the moon next?
Yeah. Just beam it right onto the moon there.
When the aliens finally arrive, also, like, why have you taken so long? I think that they're going to be like, where is your president of the universe, SpongeBob Squarepants?
Right. Like, go, yeah, SpongeBob. Right.
Bring us SpongeBob.
Where is
the being who was the king at the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Right?
It's SpongeBob. Yeah. That's who you're looking for. Yes.
Oh my God, the SpongeBob balloon. When that was added that year, I lost my mind. I think I cried, and I think it's on the internet. I think you can
That's
find
great.
It. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
What a pleasure allowing us to dive even deeper into the world of SpongeBob and what it takes to make every single episode. So when y'all are just sitting at home being like, oh, I've watched everything. When's the next one coming out? I'm going to tell you, you need to be patient, okay?
Right. Yeah.
Because listen to all what goes into it, okay? And in the meantime, there's always a new episode. There really is always a new episode coming out. You guys are doing great with timing and content. So thank you again for sharing some of that insight with us.
Thank you.
Amazing.
That was so fantastic.
Huge thanks to Jenny Monica for sharing her incredibly valuable time. I mean, I can't think of a person whose time is more valuable than Jenny Monica, wrangling these shows, moving to a VP position for animation as a whole. This was such a fantastic interview. We learned so much. We got some great stories. So thank you, Jenny. That was awesome.
Thank you, Jenny. And what a boss. And like, just go for your dreams, guys. You know, from receptionist to vice president. Wow. What an amazing, amazing journey. And
so cool.
Thank you. I feel very grateful. So I'm just,
it's inspirational. It's inspirational is what it was. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling grateful as well.
Inspirational. I'm very, very happy today. So thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to follow us to see what we're going to get up to next week on SpongeBob Binge Pants.
Bye.